Welcome to the Anarchy Gumbo Podcast. Michael W. Dean of the Freedom Fiends cooks up a very special blend of liberty, guns, sex, rock and roll, drugs, and thriving in spite of the state in an increasingly worrying world. All with a rotating cast of nifty guests who are also up in the middle of the night.
That's the reason.
So you're broken, you have outdated Mac. So we're recording now. We have another fine episode with a fine young Liberty person here, Drew Phillips. How you doing, Drew?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. Thanks for coming on the Anarchy Gumbos. The Anarchy Gumbos.
I thought this was Kitty Feet.
No, this is kittyfeet.com is Anarchy Gumbo.
That's the worst domain name ever.
Kitty Feet. Yeah, it is. It's actually when I got on the internet 15 or 16 years ago, I bought that domain, and it was like my private web, my personal website for a long time. And I ended up having like 30 domain names, and I was getting rid of ones, not renewing them recently that I'm not using anymore. And I almost got rid of that. And I wanted to start the Anarchy Gumbo podcast. And I was like, well, I need to get anarchygumbo.com. And I'm like, no, I don't. I'll use this other one. It'll save money. It'll be weird.
No, that's cool. If it works for you.
Yeah.
I forget it. I certainly remember.
Yeah. It's actually getting more. It's not as popular as Freedom Fiends yet, but it's getting popular really quickly. It's got like a third of the listeners or half the listeners, which, you know, after 2 months is pretty awesome. I don't think people don't like talking here in Nima, but I think it's people just, they like to hear, I talk so much, they want to hear a different guest every week. That's what it is.
That's cool. You said you're backed up, so, you know, you should do more if you've got a lot of content.
Yeah, this one's not coming out for 3 weeks. I got two in the can. So, how's the weather there in Phoenix?
It's hot. I'm in Tucson, actually, but it's hot all the same.
Yeah, 100 and what?
It was 103 today.
It was 95 here today, which is pretty unseasonably warm for Wyoming, and I was, like, bitching about it. In the summer, I generally sleep in the day, and I'm up at night to get away from the hot. But today, while I was typing, a bird flew into my window twice. It's supposed to be bad luck when a bird flies into your window. I don't believe that. But then it got up again and flew into my window again, and it was, like, stunned in the backyard for about 15 minutes with its mouth open and then flew away. It was kind of spooky looking.
That's interesting. This is like you ever watch Cartoon Network and watch, like, Space Ghost Coast to Coast?
Yeah.
That's what this interview reminds me of.
Well, we can take it wherever you want to take it. I just talked about the weather and small talk to get started.
That's cool. I feel old when I talk about the weather, but I mean, I appreciate that.
There's a thing on Family Guy where the son, Steve, takes some experimental CIA drug and becomes an old man overnight. And to get him out of his funk, his mother's like, look, Steve, Weather Channel. And Steve runs in like a panting dog to watch the Weather Channel. I guess old people like the Weather Channel.
You know, yeah, I don't know what to say about that. I mean, it is hot in Arizona. That's what we're known for. But, I think I have more interesting things to talk about than the weather.
How old are you?
I'm 31.
I'm 48. You're a youngster.
Compared to you, but I'm starting to feel old.
Yeah, yeah.
I can't eat fast food and drink all night anymore. You know, like, it catches up with me.
I can still fuck all night, which a lot of guys my age can't, but my back hurts the next day, which didn't happen when I was a young man.
I'm really glad to know that, and I'm actually happy for your significant other. I don't know if you're married or what, but
yeah. Yep. Yeah,
I'm happy for her.
I don't take no little blue pills, put it that way. So, enough about me. Why is your username Audio Bum?
Cuz I'm kind of a bum.
How so? Do you have a house? Do you have a place to live?
I have a place to live, yeah. It's actually my sister's.
Couch surfing?
No. I rent a guest house, her guest house, so we make it work. But I have family in Tucson, so I'm sort of rooted here. I used to live in Phoenix, but I kind of came back for family reasons. But Audio Bum, actually, Bum was my father's call sign. He was a pilot, and they all have weird call signs.
Yeah.
So I kind of adapted and kind of stole his nickname. And what was interesting is he was very much not a bum. So I don't know how he got that name either. But Audio Bum, I got that email when I got fired or quit from a television station as an audio operator. So I was essentially an unemployed audio operator. So I was, in fact, an audio bum.
Huh. That's interesting. Do you, are you a fan of audio? You said you have a really good mic and like I do and would have hooked it up, but didn't. Why didn't you hook it up?
Something about Mumble and Macintosh not playing nicely together.
Does Skype play well with Macintosh and stuff? Cause we're using Skype, not Mumble.
Yeah, no, Skype does. Works fine. I'm sort of I joke that I was broke, but I have like old out of date Macs still running 10.4 and 5, and so I have a lot of issues, and I'm too cheap to upgrade, and I'm worried that if I upgrade it'll destroy my Final Cut Pro, and so I have Mac issues. I claim to be a Mac fan, but I think they're a terrible, terrible company.
I'm recording you on a Windows XP computer that's got 1 gig of RAM, while the one open in front of me that I'm not recording with is running Windows 7 with 16 gigs of RAM. But for some reason, Windows 7 doesn't play well with my mixer, so I have to record on my old computer.
You know, I was told many years ago that one day Linux would change the world, and I'm still waiting for that.
Well, I was told when I was a kid that one day there'd be flying cars, but I guess the budget was spent on flying robots to kill brown people.
If the government weren't in the way, some entrepreneurial genius 13-year-old in his dad's basement would have already created one.
Yeah, and the Japanese would have created usable sex robots that are inexpensive.
right on. The Jetsons, right, where they have flying cars.
Yeah.
That was written in the 60s, and it was believed to be 1984. No irony there, but it was believed that that was what they felt technology would be like in 1984. So we should have had flying cars and cities in the clouds in 84.
Well, that's what I'm basing that on. I was born in 64 and watched the Jetsons, you know, when I was 5 when they were current on TV. And, you know, people told me that's what it's going to be like when you're an adult. But it's a lot the same as it was when I'm an adult, except now people I've never heard of can insult me from their living rooms in different countries.
I love that. I'm talking to people in other countries. I mean, how cool is that?
It's great. And I have a saying, which is the great thing about the internet is that everybody can talk to everybody. And the horrible thing about the internet is that everybody can talk to everybody. But it's really like, it's what I wanted since I was a kid. I mean, I used to build like little FM, you know, microwatt radio transmitters when I was 11 and try to, you know, I would broadcast to my neighborhood. And I don't know if anyone listened, but it was like the thought that someone could was important to me. You know, I was looking for the internet before it existed.
So now you have Facebook and nobody pays attention to your status updates?
Actually, I have Facebook and like 1,900 people pay attention to my updates, and I constantly think about deleting my Facebook account because it's such a time suck.
Well, I'm not trying to say you're unpopular or anything. I'm just trying to point out that like you have a micro radio station and you're wondering if anyone's listening, and I tend to wonder if anyone's paying attention to my status updates.
Well, the thing is, everyone has that worldwide radio transmitter now on their computer. I mean, we sound like people 10 years ago talking about the internet is the future, but you know,
it just took 10 years, right?
It just took 10 years. Yeah. 20. Although I was on the internet before most people. I was on the internet in 1993, which is before the web. I was on Gopher. And then I was on, I had a website in 96.
So were you on like BBSs and stuff?
I was on BBSs, but by the time I was on Gopher, which is a text-only like protocol, transfer protocol. I was on that at the San Francisco Public Library in 93. I didn't have a computer at home. I had a computer at home, but I couldn't get on the internet. It was like text-only, you know, typing computer. I got a computer running Windows 3.1 in 1996, and, you know, within a week had a website. BBSs had already kind of, they were still around. Like, you know, the browser, the main browser, not BBSs. I'm thinking of news groups. BBSs right. were kind of way out gone. I mean, they still exist today for some hobbyists, but they were way gone. And the news groups were still happening when I got on in 96, but they were kind of being replaced by the web. But I was on news groups in 96, you know, the alt dot whatever news groups that the browser used to like, I mean, it used to be a tab in the browser, you know, in Netscape. There was a tab for news groups.
Oh, I remember. Sadly, I do. The first time I connected via the internet, or really a phone line, I called my best friends, you know, over the phone, and we typed with each other over terminal or whatever. And I thought, this is ridiculous. Why don't I just call you?
What year was that?
Mid-90s. I too had Windows 3.1 was the first computer I had, and it had AOL capabilities, but my parents wouldn't give me a credit card. I just remember thinking, why am I chatting with you over a phone line that I could call you on, or I could just walk 2 blocks to your house?
I was one of the first people that had DSL because I lived in San Francisco, which was one of the 3 or 4 cities that had it in 96. and you had to live within 1,000 feet of a phone company building to be able to get it. And I just happened to live within 1,000 feet of one then, and I got it. And it was like, oh my God, you know, I was on dial up for about 8 months and then got DSL. And the people who were my internet service provider was actually two gay guys that had us had servers in their apartment, and they were called Fognet. And I didn't have a credit card, so they came over to my house and I gave them cash. How cool is that?
That's awesome. That really is.
Yep.
A lot of people say like, oh, I'm the internet generation or my generation or even the older generation. But I really don't think the internet generation is that until you had broadband, which was easily accessible. Because then the internet really opened up.
Yeah.
For pirating stuff and getting every MP3 they ever wanted. And, you know, Napster really didn't become cool until I had broadband.
Yeah, I had a friend who said that he flunked out of his first year of college because he, you know, went from Wyoming, where they didn't have, they only had dial up, to whatever city he went to where the college had broadband. And he said, like, I just spent my first year downloading music and looking at porn. I didn't go to any of my classes.
Yeah, when my buddy was the first to get he had a satellite pad or whatever. It wasn't satellite, but it was the pad for Sprint that went to the downtown hub. It was the fastest internet we'd ever seen. And basically, we just sat at his house for weeks on end downloading every MP3 we ever wanted.
Yeah. What do you think of I remember when Metallica got mad at everybody and decided to sue them.
Napster bad.
Yeah. Napster bad. The only virus I've ever written was a virus that basically, if you click, remember there was like this, Napster would ban you, you know, if they found you downloading Metallica. And there was this thing to unban you. If you'd been banned, it did some like reg edit. And if you clicked on that, it would unban you and you could download again on Napster. But I made this little thing that basically what it would do is it would add to the file names of all your MP3. It would say Metallica bad. So it'd be like Metallica bad _ Pink Floyd the Wall .mp3 or whatever. It would automatically do that. And I bundled that with the actual fix and uploaded it to some news groups and my website and said, like, here's the fix if you're unbanned for Napster. You know, click on these two files. And I got a bunch of people to inadvertently change. Basically, my idea was if everybody had Metallica in the name of all their MP3 files, they couldn't ban them. But it didn't spread far enough.
That's still pretty cool. I just have to say that by that time, Metallica had come out with Load, and I'd pretty much lost interest, so I don't think I was downloading.
They sucked. Yeah, they went and they like had a style makeover. They suddenly like started looking like the Chili Peppers.
I saw them in 96 at a Lollapalooza tour, and the entire audience was chanting, "No new stuff." They had to play like all their old stuff and only played like 3 new songs from their newer albums because nobody there wanted to hear it.
And then they got therapists and went to group marriage counseling.
Like I said, I lost interest after that point. I wasn't it. I claim to be punk rock, but the truth is I'm more of a pop punk kid.
What kind of music you like, or what are some bands you like?
Yeah, like pop punk, like Minor Threat is actually older than me, but like NoFX was like the coolest thing ever, right? And so I don't know, I got into a lot of punk rock and even hardcore music when I was younger, like Earth Crisis and Hatebreed, and I like things that were aggressive and mean.
Hatebreed.
Yeah, Hatebreed, right?
So, Hatebreed, they were like kind of the template for all the like angry jock metal punk crossover, hardcore crossover.
I did. I've been in like sound. I've been into recording and studio equipment for a long time, even as a teenager. And I did like demos for like all my friends' high school bands and stuff. And after a while in high school, I'm like, why do all my friends want to sound like the Deftones and Korn? This is really getting old. So I don't know. I kind of got out of that. And I'd say I refined my taste, but I really just found hip hop. So what are you gonna do?
Yeah. You know, I recorded a song with Ian Rakai from Minor Threat. Have you ever heard it?
No, you're supposedly like somebody I should know, but I don't. So tell me, like.
Well, I'm somebody that I think you should know. That's what a lot of people would say, but.
That's what a lot of bands would say. Yeah, I've heard that before. But so, like.
About me or about themselves?
Yeah, about their own music.
Well, yeah, every record is the greatest record ever made. If you read the websites, you know.
All the records that I've helped were awesome too.
Have I heard of any of them?
No, they were all indie bands, high school garage stuff.
The thing I did with Ian Rakai was I was in this band called Baby Opaque in Charlottesville, Virginia in 1986. And we went up to the studio where all the Discord stuff was recorded, Don Ziantara's Inner Ear Studio, to record our record. And I knew Ian, and I called him up, and I had him come in and sing backup. It's the first record he ever sang backup on that wasn't his. And it was a punk rock cover of the song Long Black Veil, the Johnny Cash song.
Wow.
I'll send it to you after this and maybe put it at the end of the episode or something.
No, that's cool, man. You actually have, like, real history. I lived in L.A. For 2 years, and the coolest thing I can say is I smoked pot with DJ Lethal and met John Carpenter. Like, that's it.
Cool. I lived in L.A. for 5 years in L.A. and then, like, 5 years in Agoura Hills and, you know, was there, like, to make movies and make it in Hollywood or whatever, which, you know, I don't think I didn't do, but in my own kind of way I did. I met the only famous people I ever met, you know, like everyone I knew was out like at the parties networking and stuff and met a lot of cool people, but they all went back to Ohio after 5 years. And I, the two people I ever met was, I met, Weird Al Yankovic and didn't know it was him. Someone's like, "Hey, this is Al." And I'm like, "Hey, cool, Al." You know, he didn't look like he looked really, he didn't have his glasses on. And then I met Robert Downey Jr., but it was when I was directing him doing the narration on a film I directed. So that's kind of cool.
That is cool.
Yep. He's amazing. He is amazing. But, yeah, I mean, I'm more into DIY stuff anyway, because even the people I know who've had some success in Hollywood, like I have a friend who sold 3 screenplays for like $75,000 each approximately, and none of them ever got produced. And he's like, you know, now he's broke and he's heartbroken and still trying to work on other projects, and God bless him. I hope he succeeds. But, and I know a girl that, like, you know, was just struggling to be an actor there for 3 years, and she finally got to play a dead body on CSI New York, you know?
Yeah, it's hard, man. Like, when I got to L.A., and it was, like, 2000, and all of us were, you know, had computers and Pro Tools, M-boxes and stuff, and we all knew that all these studios were screwed and were going to go out of business soon because people could make beats and record their own stuff at home and take it into the studio for mixing. I mean, it was – we knew we were in a field that was going away. You know, at the time there were 3, you know, there were 7 labels anymore, and there were only 2 privately owned recording studios in all of Hollywood, and everything else was just being eaten up by the corporate structure, and, you know, the old school of recording and analog and all of that was certainly on its way out.
I wonder how much a 24-track 2-inch tape recorder costs right now.
Probably not much. If I, you know, old Ataris were like $50,000 machines. You get a Studer for $60,000 or $70,000. I bet you get them now for next to nothing.
I don't know, though. I was thinking about it. You know, it's not like a typewriter. Like, for a while, you could buy a typewriter at Salvation Army for $10, but they've all kind of been snapped up, and they don't make them much anymore. I think that there are – I know that there are people who still record on tape, so those multi-track recorders probably all got snapped up.
Well, you have the diehards that won't let it go.
No, there's still a couple companies that make tape, but they don't make a lot of it. A lot of people buy used tape and erase it and work over it now.
Yeah, I'm sure. It's just not, it's not really feasible anymore. I mean, it's so much cheaper to get a computer and a Pro Tools rig and, you know, do it out of your apartment.
I've always thought that the analog versus digital debate had some credence at first. You know, like the first CDs that came out sounded kind of crunchy because they hadn't really perfected the encoding yet. But I swear CDs sound better than vinyl now. I mean, vinyl has a sound that's different than CD, and part of it's because it's a little more muted. It doesn't have the bright highs, and it doesn't have the same dynamic range. But I think people that say it sounds better, it's just they're used to the particular artifacting of vinyl, and I think digital sounds better. You know, there's a while when, like, real photographers still used film, and it's like, but now cameras are so, you know, $200 camera is so high def, it's like there's no reason except clinging to the past.
Well, and the argument is that this generation doesn't even know what those bright highs sound like. You know, they're used to MP3s that don't have a high end. And what's the point of spending the money recording analog to get that bright tone if the end product is just going to be heard on an MP3 player?
Everything is heard. Everything's heard on an MP3 player now, too. It's like, right. You know.
And it was encoded at, you know, whatever, 96K or some ridiculous, you know. I mean, it could be better, but the end user doesn't care, so why should the artist anymore? That was kind of the argument that we saw. But.
Give me convenience or give me death.
Yeah.
To quote the name of a Jelly Biafra spoken word record, or is that a Dead Kennedy's best of? I can't remember.
You're probably just quizzing me because I have no idea.
When I was your age, we used to dance the mambo at the Copa.
Copacabana?
I'm kidding. I'm just sounding old. It's like, at this point, it's like, if you talk about the Dead Kennedys, they're like, shut up, Grandpa.
I'm trying to keep up, but, you know, like, I'm just not that punk rock.
Well, I think you become, I think people don't really become old until they stop being teachable. But I think in one lesser way, that's not a bad thing. People become old when they, when everything on their iPod or whatever is music that came out, you know, over 10 years ago. And I passed that up about 10 years ago.
So you don't listen to your Bobby Brown records anymore?
No, man. I listen to Minor Threat and Dead Kennedys and Pink Floyd.
That's cool. You can't deny Pink Floyd. Nobody knows what a album is anymore.
Yeah. When I was your age,
you listened to the whole thing all the way through.
Well, you know, that was one of the reasons that Napster took off, is because when they came out with, okay, when you bought vinyl, you could buy a 12-inch record for $7.99. You could also buy a single of the only two good songs on a lot of records for like 99 cents. And when they came out with CDs, they didn't have CD, like CD singles came out too, but you know, CDs cost like $8.99 when they came out, and CD singles cost like $4.99. And everyone said, fuck that. Like, they didn't have a business model for selling digital singles yet until iTunes came out, and Napster really filled that void.
It's true. People only want that pop song. People only want the song that they heard on the radio. They really don't want to listen to the other 13 songs.
If the record companies hadn't been stupid and bucked business models like iTunes that tried to come out before iTunes, you know, they all said, no, we'll never sell our music over the internet. It's piracy. Even if we're selling it, they'll pirate it. And, you know, all the record companies said that. If they had not done that and they'd, like, worked with companies like Roxio and other companies that came out and tried to do a iTunes-type thing when CDs had just come out, I think that the file-sharing thing wouldn't have taken off as explosively as it did, because it was really just about getting the single. And people would have paid for it, but they just wanted the single. They didn't want to pay for the whole record.
No, it's true. And, I mean, that's why iTunes was so successful, is they gave people what they wanted at a price they couldn't argue with.
And the record companies acted like old school dinosaurs, and they drowned in their own tar pits from it.
And eventually they had to come around and embrace it.
Yep.
You're listening to the Anarchy Gumbo Podcast, a tasty stew of freedom and fun. Subscribe at kittyfeet.com. That's KittyFeet.com.
Tired of the false economy? Want to carry real money in a form that people will dig getting? Don't Tread on Meme now has Freedom Fiends and Guns and Weed silver dime cards. Collect all four. Trade them with your friends. Freedom Fiends silver dime cards are also great for starting conversations with statists about liberty. Go to freedomfiends.com today and click the link at the top that says silver dime cards. That's freedomfiends.com.
So what are some of the bands you produced or engineered?
None that you would know. Like,
Don't be so sure.
No, that's like the worst way to put it, that I even produced or like worked. I worked in LA for 2 years in a studio, but I was the guy who got coffee and tacos.
What
and
studio?
Cherokee.
Heard of it.
And I interned at a few others, like Enterprise. And I not like interned at others, but I'd always toured others, like I smoked out of Weezer's bong inside Ocean Way one time. That was really cool. But, like, I didn't actually get to meet them. So, like, I have all these stories of, like, this band was here. Like, if I had been in the hallway 10 minutes earlier, like, I would have met somebody cool. But, like I said, I worked in the back, and I cleaned the studios.
I've been to Cherokee Studios. I've been there. I'm looking on the website. I'm trying to think. Do you know a guy named...
It doesn't exist anymore.
Do you know a guy... They tore it down. What year?
So that was 2000, 2001. I was in L.A. for 9/11.
I was in L.A. for 9/11, too. Do you know a guy named Warren Ruart, who worked there?
Doesn't ring a bell.
Warren. What the fuck is his name? Yeah, I knew him. He was really good friends with Weezer, and they recorded there. I'm looking at the picture of it. I went to his wedding in that building.
That's cool.
Yeah.
They were owned by the Robs. Do you know that? Do you know them?
I don't know them. Who are they?
They were like some really crappy like pop band in the 60s, like the Monkees, and they were known as the Rob Brothers, and they actually owned that studio. It was one of the last... privately owned studios in LA at the time, and now it's been torn down. And I went there like, I don't know, 3 or 4 years ago, and I drove by there, and it was a condo. I was really upset. No, it was pretty cool. Like, John Carpenter always did his stuff there. The original Halloween soundtrack was up in the tape vault. That was pretty cool. So there was some old Lynyrd Skynyrd in there. Like, I didn't listen to this. This was just tapes that were falling apart and needed to be properly archived and stored.
Yeah, that was the thing about tape, man. It was really delicate. Like, I was in this band called Bomb Somebody just recently found the masters from 1986 from Hyde Street Studios, and they were unplayable. Like the ferrite oxide was chipping off of them.
Do you know how you archive those? You actually bake them in an oven, play them on, and then by the time you're done playing it off, they fall apart. But if you bake them in the oven, they'll hold their integrity long enough for you to play them into some sort of recorder. Yeah. The big thing that was going on when I was out there was 5.1 and DVDs were huge. And they were all the studios were looking for all the old quadraphonic master files because they could take the quadraphonic and turn it into 5.1 really easily.
Yeah,
they just put it into the four speakers and then they, you know, kind of blend the front two and make a center channel and send all the lows to a subwoofer channel, and boom, they had a 5.1 of all these old masters.
They did that in the mixer, or they actually played it through speakers and put microphones in front of them?
I've heard of that technique, but I have no idea. I was just responsible for going through the tape vault and finding anything that was quadraphonic, and we were selling it back to the labels.
Awesome. Well, that's the thing. When new formats come out, they always make a lot of money on the back catalog, which is one reason why they're really into copyright. You know, it's like, and now copyright's extended to like, what, 50 or 75 years plus life of the artist or something?
Yeah, it's pretty ridiculous. Like we had a whatever the agreement was, anything that was in our vault at that point belonged to us because whoever didn't pay for it or didn't want it.
Well, the tapes belonged to you, but the music didn't. But the act of mixing the tape and selling that you could do because you owned the tapes, right?
Right, but they had already done that, and there was just this demand for all old quadraphonic masters, and the owners were like, hey, we need to find all these masters because we know there's a market for them, and we can, you know, identify who owns the rights and sell them the tapes. It was just one little project that I got to work on, digging through this vault of all these old tapes and reels and stuff. So, it was just kind of cool.
So were the labels releasing that as a audio DVD or some sort of 5.1 CD?
Yeah, I don't even really know what they were doing it with in the end, but that was going on a lot. Is there people they were remastering them and, you know, even, you know, putting them back into soundtracks and stuff for movies. So it was just there was a demand for old quadraphonic stuff, and we jumped on it. So it was just one little project in a 2-year span that I worked on getting scraped up in this attic vault that was not the proper place to store tapes.
Did you guys mix them first and then contact the original owner, or did you contact the owner first and then mix them if they wanted them?
We didn't do anything. I just logged them and said, here's what we have, and we contacted them and sold them back to them. They can do whatever they want with them.
Cool. What do you think of the concept of intellectual property?
I don't think it exists. I mean, I don't think it's piracy. I think if we got past this debate and it would help local artists, it would help independent artists, and we would get a better diversity in music.
You've actually burned some authorized bootleg copies of my movie Guns and Weed, haven't you?
They were authorized?
I didn't tell you not to, and I'm not coming after you.
I didn't ask.
Yeah, there you go. That's even better.
Well, yes. But I tried to make the point to you one night, like, I think, you know, especially because you embrace it, like, you should format a DVD for that purpose.
Yeah.
So, like, it would have extra, you know, bugs on it, little crawls that say, please support our movie and go to our podcast page or whatever. And that is what you would encourage people to burn freely. And then you can make the DVD they would buy, you could, you know, have extra features that would make them actually want to buy it.
Yeah, like just have the movie without the extras on the free one, too.
Yeah, and then you could put that copy on YouTube. And like I said, you could put, you know, little website watermarks on the bottom so people would know to go to your website or whatever.
Yeah, but that's a lot of work, and people just eventually buy the thing and put it all on YouTube anyway. So
yeah, but if you do that, you disincentivize them even bothering to put it on YouTube because it's already there.
Yeah, we'll talk later. We'll talk after the show. I got
all kinds of ideas for you. I've really thought this thing through because, like, I've done my own videos, and I really hate YouTube, and they're, you know, they basically take all your stuff once you upload it. It belongs to them. So I've really thought it through, and there are ways to innovate around this type of stuff and protect your, I won't say intellectual property, but protect your creation.
To what extent does YouTube own your stuff? I don't think they own your stuff when you upload it.
Yeah, no, read the terms of service. I mean,
I never read that shit, man. I never read that. And, you know, allegedly I sign the contracts because I click okay. But it's like, if I read every user term agreement put in front of me, that's all I would do. You know, every time I do a fucking software update, there's 20 pages of lawyer speak that I'm supposed to read before I click okay.
They should write a South Park episode about this. But
they did. Like, are you joking? They did.
I was kidding.
You're joking, okay.
So, like, no, I mean, YouTube's just the worst example, I think. And I don't think any of the other ones are any better. But I was really bothered when I immediately realized that YouTube will send you an email almost immediately when you upload a video that has copyrighted material in it and say, no, that has Money by Pink Floyd in it. You can't watch this in South Africa, or we're going to place an ad on it or a link to iTunes and Amazon. They have some sort of algorithm in there that will automatically detect the song.
Oh, I've got stories about that. First of all, you can get a proxy of a VPN to go around that. I'm using one called Bolha, B-O-L-E-H VPN. That's like 25 cents a day. Look at me inserting ads in the middle of a conversation. But Bolha VPN is really good, and there's a link on Freedom Fiends if you want to go there. And
I mean, it stops them from detecting the fact that you're
no. It routes you through a server in another country. It's good for security. Like, you know, if you don't want the government knowing that you're searching, you know, if I don't want the government knowing I'm searching, you know, fat grandma porn or whatever. You know, it doesn't show up as from my IP. But also, if there's regional controlled content, like people use VPNs a lot. You know, if like say if they live in Europe and there's like Hulu stuff, like Hulu, you can only watch in a couple countries, you know, but out of those countries, if you use a VPN that has an indoor, you know, a server in that country, you can watch Hulu, things like that. And the same thing with like, you know, you can't watch this in England on YouTube. If you're in England, you can route through an American server with your VPN and watch it.
It's just difficult to add those extra steps when I just want to watch a YouTube. You
know it's really mean? Not that hard though. I mean, it's like,
say that, but it is one more step that I have to do.
It is one more step, but it's also a step that protects you in a lot of ways and is really useful, you know. And it's like, you know, it hides your IP address too when you're searching stuff. I mean, it does not hide, like, for instance, if you're logged into your Google account and you do a search on Google, Google's still going to have a record that that user searched, you know, fat grandma porn. But they're not going, you know, if you're not logged into something and you're surfing places that you don't want people to know you're surfing, no one can tell you're surfing them.
Yeah, I get it, and I think it's cool. Like, the internet will always innovate around these problems, but I look at it from the standpoint that I'm not doing anything wrong, so what do I care?
I'm doing it right now. This conversation is being routed through Luxembourg, actually.
Like you're threatening the audio quality just to like not know that you ever talked to me.
No, I just have it so it comes on automatically on my computer. It slows it down by about 5%, but it's not affecting the quality. I don't think this sounds fine to me. Do I sound good?
Well,
to you?
Thanks. I was really worried about, you know, the KGB or whoever coming down doing this interview. I'm sure I'm going to get flagged.
The Russians are coming through my window. No, I didn't do it to talk to you. I did it happened automatically when I turned my computer on this morning.
No, that's cool. Like I said, I think it's neat. Like the internet and the nerds out there and the open source community will always innovate around these problems, but I'm not too worried about it, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's an advertiser of the Fiends, and I got it free to use, so
I'm sorry. Let me write that down.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hey, I think it's great. I think it's great that you have advertisers and supporters and sponsors. I do too. Can I give out some plugs?
Sure, man.
We can get to that point later.
No, go ahead.
I buy all my silver from Roberts and Roberts Brokerage. But Tim over there is probably going to be mad that I said that on the show because he's not going to understand this.
He won't know.
You're right.
We're not hiding it from him, but, you know, if it's not in the show notes, he's not going to find it. No one's going to tell him, hey, look, check it out.
He has a real job, and he's too busy to listen to stuff like this, probably.
Yeah, I'm looking at his website right now. It looks good.
RRBI.co, not com, C-O.
Yeah.
Because some punk is cyber squatting on that website.
Huh. What is .co?
I think it's the UK version of com, right? That's what I thought.
Okay. Wow, this site looks
good. You always hear that, like, bbc.co or whatever?
Well, I thought it was always .uk.co. But maybe.
Well, did you know that? TV is like Tanzania or something.
Yeah.
And then .ly is Libya. And so you have like Bitly, right? BIT.ly.
Yeah.
And during the whole Libyan thing, apparently like Bitly was going to have to shut down because there was a war going on in their country.
And then there's .fm, which is Federated States of Micronesia, but a lot of radio people use it. Like this this interview we're doing is going to go out on the Liberty Radio Network, which is LRN.FM, which is based in New Hampshire, but they got a .FM, which is in Federated States of Micronesia.
Hey, man, if it makes it easier to remember it.
It really does.
Nobody really knows where the Federated States of whatever is, so, you know, why bother?
Micronesia? I don't know. It's where, like, big booby ladies walk around naked on the beach, I think.
Well, I go to a lot of their websites.
So, Silver.
I mean FM. I listen to a lot of radio.
So we should talk about how, yeah, that's it. So let's talk about how the government stole my silver.
Or
someone working for the government.
Should we set this up, like the fact that I made silver dime cards?
Yeah, let's talk about that. Let's not work backwards. If we work backwards and say, order things from me and they'll get stolen. No, this was a unique situation and you've rectified it. But talk about the dime cards.
So, I don't know. I was interested in silver. Like, I've always been interested in silver. I always thought it was a good way to protect yourself against inflation, and we could go on and on about that, I'm sure. But this guy in New Hampshire named Ron Helwig, he made this card called the Shire Silver Card, and he put in a little gram of silver and a little, you know, he does half gram, 5 gram cards, and they're really neat. So, his idea was that it could be a currency, and you could trade in grams of silver. But when I looked at it, I thought, you know, it's not as recognizable, and you might have a hard time explaining to people what that gram of silver is, what it's worth, et cetera, et cetera. So I figured it'd be cooler to put old Mercury dimes or Liberty dimes, FDR dimes, these old 90% pre-65 silver dimes in it, because a lot of people, it's more recognizable what it is. Silver shops know what it is. My grandmother knows what it is. So I just started, I kind of took his idea and tried to improve on it. And unfortunately, it took off, so I started selling a lot of my own personal silver. And then I got smart about it, and I started marking them up a lot higher. And I've turned it into a little small little business. I mean, I'm not making millions of dollars, but I'm not going backwards financially, and I'm selling what I believe to be a very effective educational tool.
Yep.
So you have this little card. It's a silver dime. On the back, it'll tell you what the dime's worth, depending on the silver value of that day. Because silver fluctuates. So it'll tell you what it's approximately worth. And if you really wanted to, like if you were in the magical place known as Porkfest, you could go buy coffee with it, or you could buy a hot dog with it, or you could find somebody who also knows the value of it and wants it, and they would be willing to trade with you. So we're just promoting silver barter and saying, you know, this used to be money. Paper and Federal Reserve notes is not money. Wouldn't it be cool if we used real, honest, sound money?
That's one of the selling points that we put in the ad that we made for you, which is in this episode somewhere of, you know, want to use real money. And then also said, like, it's great for starting conversations with statists about liberty, because it really is. And it's when I was born in 64, which is the year they last made dimes out of actual silver that's worth something. And after that, all 65 and later dimes are, it's all the same design, but they were made out of something that's pretty much worthless. And I remember being like, you know, 6 or 7 years old in like 1971, 72. And my dad explaining that to me, and you know, he had a 1961 dime and he got in change and he showed it to me and he said, see these, Michael, this is before 1964. If you get any dimes that are ever, if you ever get dimes that are 64 or earlier, save them because they're worth more. And I was like, okay. And I didn't really understand anything about monetary policy or world banking or federal banking or anything, but I started saving those. And I remember he and I used to go to a coin shop and sell them. You know, we'd get 10 or 20 of them or 50 of them or whatever together. And we'd take a roll of them in and sell them. And I think we got like, I don't know, 35 or 45 cents each for them. And I thought like I could get rich doing this, but you know, everyone else was doing the same thing. So I never did.
Oh, no, people have.
Have they?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the people have done large-scale operations to that end, probably closer to the 80s late 70s when things silver really started shooting up. I'm aware of stories and individuals who have done that at great, you know, on a grander scale and literally made millions off of it.
Cool. I thought it was magic. You know, it was like you buy a candy bar for 50 cents, someone gives you back change and there's a dime in it, but the dime is worth as much as the 50 cents you originally, you know, it's like, it seemed like magic to me as a kid. I didn't understand any of it, but I was like, oh, that's one of those little things in life that's magical.
Don't you wish you had kept all those dimes though?
Oh God, I wish I did. Yeah. My grandfather actually once bought a brand new car, using entirely silver dollars. He was a farmer and he saved all his silver dollars. And he brought him in one of those, a couple of those like 10-gallon milk containers, you know, Can you imagine what $10 worth of, you know, pre whatever silver dollar? I mean, like, you know, the car was like $3,000 or something. Can you imagine what 3,000 silver dollars would be worth now? Like real silver?
I've heard stories of people who will still take silver dollars into the bank and the bank will give them a dollar for it. And some crafty employee at the bank is probably pulling them back out, but.
Or, you know, and his brother's working at the Denver Post Office. Let's talk about that.
The Denver Post Office. That's correct. That's what it was. So I ship these silver dimes. You can buy them on our website at donttreadonmeme.com. I've shipped them to England, you know, without a problem. And I've primarily used the United States Postal Service because if it fits, it ships, and they have like cheap priority shipping. And actually, my partner Ross says that they actually lose money on every shipping. So that's like our contribution to smashing the state. But I don't. But so
the state smashed back though in this case.
They sure did. So I shipped, what did you order, 12 of them?
About, yeah, 50-some bucks worth.
And I even remember I put in some extras because I was really appreciative of your ad and you trying to promote them and stuff. So I even put in more than that.
They were Freedom Fiends dime cards. You made Freedom Fiends dime cards, and the Muslim agorist Davi helped us with the design, and they're really cool. I haven't seen one yet. I've seen pictures, but...
Yeah, so I put in the 12 you ordered, and then I put in like three more. I put in some empty cards in case you had dimes. I put in some other material that I had laying around and just whatever. I had a whole goodie bag for you, and I shipped it. And then, I don't know, a week or 2 weeks later, I get a letter in the mail that says, "We lost your package. Do you want us to look for it?"
Didn't they send you the either a photo of or the actual like outside envelope with your address and my address on it?
They had the part of the box that I wrote your address on and my return address on. So they had enough of the box to get the addresses off of it, but the contents of the box is in Denver.
Yeah, and someone in the post office has 15 Freedom Fiends dime cards in their pocket.
Well, like I said, I have done this without a problem. I had one other problem, and it just got returned. I had the wrong address. I had to send it again. But I've had no other problems, so I'm convinced you're flagged, and they were convinced I was sending you guns and/or weed.
Probably, and
I think it's your fault, actually.
Yeah, it probably is. But well, it's not my fault; it's the government's fault. But it's the fact that you did something with me that flagged it. But which is, I don't do much by mail. You know, people write me all the time, and they're like, "Hey, I read your filmmaking book. I want to send you my DVD," and I'm like, "Send me a link, man. I'll look at it on YouTube." You know, I don't like the mail. It's also kind of like everything's digital now. It's like, why need to mail anything, you know?
Yeah, well, A...
Except silver.
I tend to insure packages, and a lot of people said I was paranoid for that, and I'm not, because in this case, I really wish I had insured that package. But by the time this podcast actually reaches the light of day, I will have updated my shipping policy, and I'm only going private sector mail, so...
Yay.
Please, customers, rest assured that your packages will not be lost like Michael W. Dean's was.
Yep. I'm special. The government has a hard on for me. They probably don't. I mean, they probably do. You know, I'm sure there's somebody in some cubicle who part of their week is listening to the new Freedom Fiends and Anarchy Gumbo, but it's probably along with listening to everything else on LRN and listening to Alex Jones and listening to a few other things. So, you know, I think I'm on the long list of weirdos, but not on the short list.
I wish I could get that job.
Really? Well,
it'd
be a fun job, but you know what? You're saying you want to work for the man?
Well, no, I don't want to like rat you out. I just want to get paid to listen to LRN on all FM. Because I do it anyway. So.
Yeah. I listen to LRN all the time. I leave it on the background. I kind of say it's like NPR for anarchists. You know, liberals leave NPR on all the time in the background. And it's similar in that it's like pretty well produced content. A variety of things that all have kind of the same political agenda, 24/7, and you know, streaming, and it's just like NPR, man.
Just
for anarchists.
Like NPR. For anarchists. Sure, okay. For anarchists. But I mean radio, like especially drive time radio, people are only getting 35% of the content. You know, they're doing something else while they're watching it. So radio is difficult. You have to really like, hook people and get them to listen intently and talk about something that interests them. So it's a challenge, but I think I do think the hosts on LRN do a great job of that.
Cool.
You're listening to the Anarchy Gumbo podcast. That proves you're smarter than most people. Are you one of the 12% of Americans who still approves of our government? and we need your help to force the other 88% into compliance. When you're not busy spying on your neighbors or squinting at everyone, tell anyone who will listen why more government is a good thing. You'll get a warm and fuzzy feeling demanding more taxes and arguing in favor of gun control while militarizing our police, because folks just aren't smart enough to handle real freedom.
That is so square. Check out the additional Freedom Fiends show, Freedom Fiends Live, every Sunday on the LRN.FM streaming feed or satellite radio.
Broadcasting live and worldwide from a windowless bunker inside a mountain near an undisclosed location in the rural Wild West of the occupied states of America.
Freedom Fiends Live expands on the Fiends weekly Wednesday podcasts, but now we're kicking the hornet's nest live. Talk back to the back talkers every Sunday from 5 to 7 p.m. East Coast time. From the makers of Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom, Freedom Fiends Live. Call in soon before we get droned.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
So, talk about Special Agent G. Fox.
Special Agent G. Fox. Do you like sponsor him or something? The Disindoctrination Podcast?
Not in a financial sense, more in the sense of like an AA sponsor. I taught him how to podcast and gave him a lot of advice.
That's not working very well because he was pretty drunk at Porkfest.
I'm not his alcohol sponsor. I'm his podcast sponsor.
See, that implies that you're like giving him money.
No, it's sponsoring when you join the mafia, someone has to sponsor you in. You know, someone has to vouch for you and then take
he's
you
your
under the
apprentice.
Ring. He's my apprentice.
It?
Yeah, yeah, but you know, I think he's snatched the pebble from my hand to the point where he can go do it on his own.
No, I think his podcast is great, and I do. I think he should be called Special Agent G. Fox.
He calls me M Dub. It's my middle initials W. Yeah, M Dub. M-Dub and the Adventures of M-Dub and G-Fox. Well, that's what I'll say when I introduce him on Sunday as the guest host on the Freedom Fiends podcast. And for those of you listening to this, that was 2.5 weeks ago. 3 weeks
right.
ago.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes. Now time.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're in Now
yeah.
Now.
So talk,
I like it.
What is Now Now? What's that from, Now Time?
It's from Spaceballs. Mm. We're in Now Now. Go back to that.
That's it.
I can't.
That's it.
Why not?
Yeah.
We just missed it. When?
Mm.
Just now. You don't know that bit?
Mm. It sounds. I knew it. I didn't know what it's from.
Yeah, Spaceballs. I really like that movie. We can talk about it.
Garrett turned me on to something even stupider and more fun than Spaceballs, which is Pinky and the Brain.
That's awesome.
I didn't see it because, I was busy shooting dope and I wasn't around any kids during that period. But Garrett knows it because he was a kid, and my wife knows it because she has kids Garrett's age. So, they're both like, you don't know Pinky and the Brain?
What was the full show called?
Yeah,
that was just a segment inside a larger animated show.
I don't know. Oh, the Animaniacs, maybe?
That's what it is. That's it.
Yeah.
And then the guys would they sung this song about all the state capitals. That song is awesome.
Yeah, Garrett turned me on to it. I looked at it a little bit on YouTube and then just ordered all the DVDs on Netflix.
Well, he was making fun of you because you had found out about the dime cards and you thought it was even cooler than I thought it was. But you were trying to figure out what a dime was worth, and he was laughing at you because you didn't know about the other part of our project, which is the silver calculator app.
Yeah, I kept saying, yeah, I think they're worth about $4.50 each when you're selling dime cards for $4.20 with shipping. Yeah, right.
Yeah, I totally should have charged you $10 a card.
What are they worth? They're worth about $2.15, aren't they, generally?
Yeah, a dime right now with the given rate. I mean, this will be changed in 3 weeks, but right now they're about $2.10. They're actually lower. I think when I looked today, it was $27 an ounce. So they were like under $2. And at Porkfest, the price is really screwed with us. But this girl, she requested one of your cards at Porkfest. She asked me, she said, do you have one of the Freedom Fiends cards? And I said, sure. And I got one for her. And I explained the project, and I said, I was talking about subjective value and how, sure, the dime is worth this at melt value, but my labor's involved, and I put this plastic and this card around it. It's worth something. And I said, I just kind of asked her, what is it worth to you? And she said, $10. And I didn't want to be a prick and rip her off, so I just took $5 and gave it to her. But
cool. Was that Nikki?
It was.
Yeah, she mentioned that to me.
She must be your biggest fan.
What I want to know is, Well, all the chicks in New Hampshire love me, you know, because I'm so cool.
I don't doubt that at all.
Yeah, that's why I can't go to Porkfest. It would make my wife cry. I would just be too popular with the chicks. Yeah. But why didn't you have the Freedom Fiends cards in the money lith, the machine you were selling from?
How do you know I didn't?
I had my spies there, man.
I didn't have a full row of them, but I guarantee there was one or two.
Sold out after Ben from Bad Quaker told me that.
Yeah, we put them like sporadically throughout the machine. I mean, we had a whole variety of cards that Davi helped make. I mean, so I just had a full smorgasbord, so to speak. And so I just kind of had them placed throughout it. And I know for a fact that I put some of yours in there.
That's cool. Cool, man. So how's...
Spies? Ben Quaker and Nikki are like your spies? That's terrible.
Everyone's my spy, man. Not everyone's my spy.
Is that why she asked me for a card and was willing to give me 10? Was she like trying to see if I can rip her off?
Oh, yeah. Well, since I'm a COINTELPRO agent, you know, it was taxpayer money. We could pay whatever we want.
That's dangerous, man.
Well, that's... You don't want to talk about it, but that's... said I'm a COINTELPRO agent, you know, an FBI plant trying to infiltrate the Liberty Movement.
I think every radio host is an FBI plant.
Well, I'm kind of honored by it because I think you're nobody. I mean, that's such a thing in Liberty of like, you know, it's lobbed at Alex Jones all the time. It's lobbed at the big people in Liberty. So I think you're nobody until someone thinks you're a Fed. So I think I've arrived now that I've been called a COINTELPRO agent.
This is going to come out wrong, but so a B-rated radio host attacks a B-rated radio host, and now you think you're somebody?
Only because he called me a COINTELPRO agent, man.
She walks these hills in a long black veil. She visits my grave when them lone winds wail. 10 years ago.
I think he's like the abusive stepdad I never had.
Who is?
Ernie.
I love the whole show. I can't listen in long doses because Ernie's voice does something to me. But
it does that to all of us. But what I will say is he's one of the best interviewers on LRN.FM.
Yeah.
He can carry an interview better than just about anybody. And I'll bet Ian and Mark could do it better, but they don't. They're not really an interview show. So, like, if especially when he has somebody from the left on, he'll give them enough rope to hang themselves. Really, I do really enjoy listening to those interviews. And if there's somebody of like that I'm interested in, I think he does a good job of giving people the floor and letting them make their points and talk about whatever they want to talk about. So,
I don't know, man. I've been interviewed on there. I've been the guest on there twice, and I had to fight to get a word in edgewise, and I said that on the air.
No, and you're correct. I actually, at Porkfest, I tried to get Mark from Free Talk Live on, and I said, Mark, if anybody can out-talk Ernie, it's you. And he wouldn't take the challenge. He could, but he just kind of played along. And I'm like, damn it, you should really like give him what four and what five.
Well, that's kind of like putting two totally evenly matched fighters. They're not going to want to do it because they're both going to end up with their faces hamburger.
That's a good analogy, yeah.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah. Pod beef.
Why didn't we bring the money list to your little freedom can little party in wherever you live?
It's not mine. I'm not there.
Boston Tea Party was trying to get us to drive from Porkfest to whatever. And we're like, really? You want us to drive cross country in 24 hours? That's not a lot of fun.
Yeah, from where it's 95 degrees and really humid to where it's 95 degrees and really dry.
No, it was like right after Porkfest, wasn't it?
It started today, and it is hot as hell in Wyoming for Wyoming.
Yeah, so I, you know, thanks, but no thanks. But it would have been really cool to bring the money lift. I'm trying to bring this vending machine to as many Liberty events as possible. And we only, you know, agreed to our sponsors that we'd take them to so many. Like, we'll be out in at Libertopia in October out in San Diego. But I'm trying to get it to Freedom Fest. And by the time you publish this, we'll find out if I'm successful. But so, like, there's some other Liberty events I'd like to take this machine to because we think it's cool. And we didn't buy a $2,000 vending machine for nothing.
Yeah. You should get people to take it in your stead when you can't do it and just have it on tour all the time.
It's heavy.
I know. So I know. It's like I sent a radio transmitter with somebody to Porkfest, you know, that weighs about 10 pounds, and that would have kind of been the hit of the place, but they forgot to bring the cable for it.
There was a few people doing them. Ernie had his, so we could have set one up, but the guys at Our Food, Your Gullet had their own. So, like, you could tune in to their little radio stream that they set up.
Like FM, you mean? Like real radio?
Yeah, FM. Yeah. And they were just playing, like, a playlist of their favorite punk rock and techno and whatever they were playing.
Cool.
So, yeah. See, which is cool because everyone's listening to LRN, right? Like, Free Talk Live, everyone goes in. I wanted to listen to music.
Yeah, that's a thought, too. I was kind of like, you know, with this person, with this transmitter, I'm like, you know, who's on LRN? I'm like, okay, you know, that's kind of, it's kind of like, I can stay home. I stayed home in Wyoming and listened to the whole thing on LRN. If I were there, I wouldn't be listening to the radio, put it that way.
Yeah, I didn't drive, I didn't travel, I flew, but I didn't fly 3,000 miles to listen to LRN. No.
I listened to more LRN during Porkfest this year than I ever have in like a 4 or 5 day period. I mean, it was like, I was there as much as could be.
Did you listen to every show? Because I asked Ian, and he said that like over 50% of his shows on the network were present at Porkfest.
I listened to every one of them except.
Ouch! He wasn't there. So like, Ernie was there. You know, Declare Your Independence. The Angel Clark show was there.
Bad Quaker.
Well, is he live?
Oh, he doesn't have a live show, but he has a show. I mean, they have live shows.
Other than. And Scott Horton, everybody else was there, like a lot of the weekend shows.
Everyone that does a live show, you mean?
Yeah, Ladies and Keen, they did their thing, and School Sucks Podcast, they do a Thursday night thing. Which, by the way, School Sucks Podcast does suck, but you should do video like they do. That's cool. I think so. I want to see your ugly face while you do this. I don't know why, but it keeps people engaged and interested. So I don't know. You could like keep more of your fans around if you did that. If you did video while you did the show.
If I did?
Yeah, you got like a webcam.
Dude, thing. I'm so boring. I did video on, God, what is the guy's name? George Donnelly has his IO unconference. I've done that 2 years and it's like, I looked at it back later and it's like, what I'm saying is compelling, but I look as interesting as a guy checking his email, you know, which is often the case with web feeds. You know, if it's not a hot chick and, you know, it's not, I don't know. It's, I'm not worth watching. I'm old and I'm not cute.
Okay. So if you had a hot chick dancing, just put the camera on that and feed your audio in. And I think that'll work for you.
Yeah.
So I'm full of these great ideas, man.
Yeah. Yeah.
I charge for consulting work if you're interested.
What kind of consulting work?
Whatever you want. I'll make you cooler.
Okay.
Whatever you're willing to pay.
When this comes out in 3 weeks and the whole things has totally blown over. If this was ripping off anyone's scab, remember this was recorded 3 weeks ago and I have completely forgotten about it by now. So what do you got coming up? What projects you're working on? What cool groovy things are happening there in Phoenix, in Tucson, in Arizona?
Well, people should check out donttreadonmeme.com and even go to moneylith.com, and they should see some of the videos we've done, because we did a viral video, and you can name a video a viral video, but that doesn't make it viral. So I need people to go watch it. And I won't even bother explaining it. I'll just say you need to go watch this 10-minute short featurette that we made, because it's really weird.
It is cool. I watch it. I really like it.
No, I appreciate that. But so like the project has two aspects to it. One is selling the silver as an educational tool to get it in people's hands, just to make them think. And then the other part is the silver calculator app, which allows – it's basically a point of sale system, which allows people to do more accurate, more convenient transactions with silver in an open marketplace. And as I said, there aren't many truly open marketplaces that take silver, you know, like Porkfest. So we need more of that. But that's sort of what we're trying to encourage. And that's why we have a vending machine that sells silver. That's why we have this app that you can get for iPhone or Droid. And all these projects sort of come together in this greater campaign that we're trying to make, this statement that, you know, we call it the wallet voting campaign, right? So you should vote with your wallet and use sound money. Because if we are honest, moral people, why would we not want to use honest, moral money?
Now, I know that you're an honest, taxpaying American and don't break any laws. But
and again, I buy all my silver at Roberts & Roberts Brokerage. That's RRBI.co. If you want your own custom dime cards, get with Tim Fry, the silver guy, and he'll hook you up.
Cool.
Tell him Drew sent you.
So I heard someone recently say, you can either be an agorist or a media activist, but you shouldn't be both. In other words, I hear a lot of people talking on different Liberty media saying things like, well, I run a business and I don't pay taxes. I think that's foolish. I've picked the pay taxes and rail against the government on the internet. I don't think it's smart to mix the two not paying taxes, bragging about it on the internet, and railing at the government on the internet. But I'm hearing more and more people do that. And I've been called a statist for saying, like, oh, you created the government. But it's like, do you really think they're not listening and can't figure out who these people are?
We did a panel talk at Porkfest, and I'll send you the video when it comes out. And it was basically just intro to alternative currencies, and it was supposed to have sort of an agorism flavor to it. And this question came up, and it was like, yeah, if I forget to pay my taxes, does that make me an agorist? Or if I sell marijuana, does that make me an agorist? And I think the answer is no. You know, George Vandrick was making the point that he works his butt off, you know, really hard at his day job, making baklava and euros and different things and cleaning houses. I mean, he's really working, and at the same time, he's not paying taxes. He's doing it all under the table. He truly is an agorist in that sense. But if I sell some necklaces, you know, on Etsy, does that make me an agorist? I don't think so. So, yeah, I think, but I don't want to discourage people from trying to participate in counter economics or find ways of making money. You know, a lot of my friends are agorists, quote unquote, simply because they're broke and they have to find other things they can do, like make chicken feeders or whatever.
Well, I think agorism is a technique, not a political ideology so much. I think you could be a leftist or communist and be an agorist.
Well, right. Like my point was, is that people are creating new jobs for themselves or turning hobbies into money-making ventures simply because they have to. And if they even considered paying taxes on it, it wouldn't be worth it. Or getting a business license or whatever. You know, so it's not by choice. It's not like I'm cool. I'm in this new agorist counterculture movement like punk rock or something. It's not a choice. It's I got nothing to lose right now. I need some money, so I'm going to sell this widget that me and my wife make.
I would say that as long as they're not shooting people, most rappers are probably have a lot of the things that libertarians have. I mean, they like weed. They don't care about weed laws. They like guns. They like gold, and they say fuck the police.
Wu-Tang started by selling demo tapes out of the back of a trunk. That's agorism. That's hustling,
yeah.
Right?
And
that's So, like, I see it more of we do this out of necessity or because we don't have choices. But, like, right, what agorist makes $60,000 a year?
Yeah.
You know, you have to have a real job and pay taxes and do all the Social Security and all that BS if you want to have a career that pays 60 plus. So people who sell, I don't want to like call out people who sell buttons, because there's a few guys that do that, but right, like people who do sell weed or whatever, or you know, sell some little trinket and call themselves an agorist. I don't know. I at least see the argument.
Yeah. Well, we're about at the end of our time here. Do you have any closing comments, counselor?
Counselor.
I'm kidding. It's lawyer speak.
Should go to kittyfeet.com and listen to Michael W. Dean.
Well, they're already there. They're listening to this. You're telling them to go where they already are.
Thank you for visiting my Facebook page. Actually, click the link and find out who this guy is.
All right, I'll link it in the show notes.
Thanks, dude.
Worms.
Worms.
Since time began, tyrants have taken aim at personal liberties. Now there's a movie that aims back.
The government has no more right to tell us what to put in our bodies than they have to take our guns or tell us what books we can read.
Six drug police were eaten by bears while raiding a marijuana farm.
On your knees, you dirty hippies!
Jesus.
On your knees!
What's the problem, officer?
Today, many cops who enforce pot laws do so only because it provides them with cushy jobs, good benefits, and a chance to push people around.
I was an undercover narcotics officer. The drug war is nothing but a farce.
The Second Amendment says you gotta keep you and your gat intact.
Guns and Weed, the Road to Freedom. A film by Michael W. Dean and Nima Vadadi.
DVD available now at gunsandweed.com or on Amazon. That's gunsandweed.com. Makes the perfect gift. Remember, that's gunsandweed.com.
Thank you for listening to the Anarchy Gumbo Podcast. Subscribe at kittyfeet.com. That's kittyfeet.com. All with a rotating guest on a spit, barbecued for your pleasure.
Outtakes, yay.